know is the different nomenclature and taxonomies that are used. We have been working with Raven, Europe, Generation, and Youth Force NOLA. They span sort of in-school, high school-type programs all the way up through connection to the workforce. And we've been looking at sort of innovative business models and how they might innovate on one of their core competencies in the soft skills space. And if they varied their model, what would change? How would cost change? How would impact change? And this was sort of a backdrop to some of the investments that we've recently made in that space. I want to introduce Devin and Al from Rethinkery Labs, located in Seattle. They conducted the landscape, and what I think we'll do is we're going to go through about slides 1 through 11, take a pause, have questions. Feel free to use the chat to add questions. And then there's a section on evaluation and assessment, which we won't go through in detail, but we will highlight maybe one or two of them, or if there's one you're interested in learning more about, feel free to try and put a note in the chat, and we'll try to accommodate that. And then we'll skip to the last set of slides on taxonomy, and Elle will talk through a little bit about how they approached and the different types of taxonomies that they found and why it is so challenging to create a single framework. And then as we do on these in the last 10 or 15 minutes, I'd love to ask for your reflections. Make sure you put any clarifying questions in the chat so we have a record of it, or any implications that you think this might have for your work. It really helps us know how useful or not useful some of these webinars are. Okay, Al, would you like to take it away and introduce them to the work?
Sure. I'm actually going to briefly turn it over to Devin first, as he's going to give a cautious overview. But thank you so much for that kind of perfect highlight through exactly what we'll be talking about. So with that, Devin, would you care to talk about the process a bit?
Yeah, thank you. So essentially, just to give some context, this is the result of a crowdsourced effort. So what we've done is identify more than 20 different experts around the world who've worked with us to first identify as many soft skills programs as we could possibly find, and then to do a deeper dive into about 50 of them, the 50 that were selected based on a series of heuristics that we discussed with the Gates Foundation. So Elle Mason, my colleague, is the leader of this team and has a background in program assessment herself, and is going to walk through essentially the results of that process. So Elle, if you'd like to dive in.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Devin. So like Devin said, we worked to develop the heuristics out of the something like 250 programs that we compiled to determine the programs of potential interest for this scan. And so what that looked like was we focused on programs that met some of or most of the criteria of a target population of Black or Latino low-income youth, programs that focused on high school to employment or high school to college, that transitional period, as well as programs that were transparent about collecting and publishing some of their data around their model and assessment and evaluation. And we developed a number of insights from that assessment. So one, we looked at the characteristics of programs that were generally most effective. And when we say effective, we mean programs that are meeting their own intended defined goals and outcomes. And so what we found there is that the programs that are most effective kind of have these similar qualities. They, one, clearly define their outcomes, and they develop logic models that clearly link their activities to their outcomes. Two, they run for a developmentally appropriate length of time or kind of intensity. So for example, there's a program called Boston Life Skills, and they provide three different versions of their curriculum, one for elementary school, one for middle school, one for high school, that kind of tailors their same skill training, but to a developmentally appropriate level. Three, they provide multiple supports or full-on comprehensive services outside of just the training. So for example, Generation provides, outside of training, living allowances or medical care and other supporting services for their participants. 4, they have continuous monitoring and improvement measurements built into their programming. And 5, they engage the youth in participatory or advocacy methods somewhat as equal contributors, and they emphasize strong relationships between the youth and their adults. So, for example, a program called Youth Build facilitates that community advocacy piece by providing their participants with the support to physically build homes and community centers, as well as engage on youth councils for advocacy issues. And as we were analyzing the programs, we kind of noticed some natural clustering in the way that we could kind of shape and think about programs, both at a skills level and an outcomes level. And we found that programs can generally be categorized by 4 outcomes: education, employment, well-being, and civics. And this is generally aligned to previous research in the space about learning interventions and how they can facilitate key-like outcomes. We found that education and employment focused programs made up the majority of the programs that we analyzed, but those well-being and prevention type programs still offer really critical opportunities to redirect youth that might otherwise need intervention later in life. And then similarly to what we stated about the most effective program components, those civics or those advocacy-focused programs are going to help facilitate positive youth development by providing those opportunities for the youth to be more engaged and participatory. Another way that we can segment the programs across the landscape is by stage of life, early childhood versus pre-adolescent, as well as programs type. Everything from toolkits to mentoring programs to programs that provide more individualized support. And we'll talk about the skills taxonomy a bit later, but at a high level, it's a bit challenging to establish one single taxonomy, but we've developed 3 models that are kind of inclusive of a variety of programs that we profiled. When we examined the geographical spread of the programs that we profiled, it suggested that there are opportunities for expanded programs in the Midwestern and Western regions, excluding California within the U.S. We noticed that extremely populated urban spaces like New York and Chicago and L.A. Tend to have an abundance of programs. They have both their own unique region-specific programs, and then they also tend to have a lot of different affiliate sites of those broader national programs. And there are also opportunities to expand programs in more rural areas. We noticed that the majority of programs profile also don't necessarily run the span of need. Although there are some programs that support participants through multiple milestones, this isn't generally the case. Most of them, if they stay with a participant through a milestone, it's only one. And program models that remain with the participants for multiple years throughout milestones are going to be particularly impactful. We looked at a number of program attributes to derive insights around what's most related to impact. And we found a few things there. So although cost is often related to duration, it varies widely, and within this sample wasn't directly related to impact. We found that duration and intensity in early intervention were more closely related to impact. And there's a small subset of organizations that receive big results relative to incredibly low cost, like iMentor, Communities and Schools, or BOTFIN Life Skills. We also found that the way that programs measure impact varied significantly across programs, and that's true even when we're talking about programs that have similar outcomes or work with similar populations and ages. So for example, there's a number of ways that an education program might measure impact. One of them could look at academic improvement or achievement through classroom attendance and self-confidence in math. Another program might look at standardized test scores and STEM activities. Another program might look at high school graduation rates. Another program might look at their access and enrollment to college. So a lot of variance in the landscape across how we're measuring effectiveness and impact, even in the same domain. As Karina mentioned earlier, we have a full section that gives a deep dive on just the variety of assessment methods and evaluation methods that exist in the space. We know that there are some out-of-the-box solutions as well as existing survey measures and instruments. However, there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution for any given program. And even the really defined programs with well-constructed systems are using a variety of strategies from a variety of sources to measure their impact, not just collecting one type of data from one type of participant.
The goal is to have multiple
pieces. And lastly, rather than applying one program's evaluation method to another, each unique evaluation should be carefully considered by factoring in the specific program's attributes and activities and outcomes and skills and participants. So moving on to just a few recommendations that came out of the space. One, we could improve and broaden our evaluation and measurement systems in the landscape. Only about a fifth of the program's profile met kind of gold standard for kind of the rigor of their evaluation methodology. And although there are a lot of programs making excellent effort towards similar outcomes, like we said, there's a difference in kind of the quality of the assessments as well as the methods. Two, we could work to create a cradle-to-career program pipeline and improve those pipelines to kind of facilitate stronger handoff between similarly grouped programs. So, for example, if two programs are working on the same types of educational outcomes, but maybe one focuses with K through five and another is middle school age, facilitating some sort of pipeline so that they can work more closely with each other and kind of mitigate that drop off that we would see in skill retention once the program ends. Lastly, we could see programs assess their student skill level at program entry and then differentiate their teaching methods based on where the students come in. So for example, a student who is brand new to, say, public speaking is not necessarily going to need the same teaching methods and strategies that a student that has some experience with debate is going to need. And so the program model should kind of be able to understand and differentiate in order to most effectively reach their students.
Hey, buddy.
I'm going to pause here and ask if anybody has any questions.
I thought you wrote that they put you on the list.
I just have to remind folks that we can hear you, and I'm not able to mute everyone. So if you could mute yourself, that would be great. Thank you. Elle, there are a couple questions in the chat.
Yeah, I just got to unmute.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Is there a connection of these programs to public health initiatives? Did you notice anything around trauma?
So I think that the programs that touch on the well-being and the prevention space are going to be most closely aligned to public health, as some of them talk through kind of healthy lifestyles and preventing negative health outcomes in students, but nothing specifically around the trauma-focused public health initiative.
Yeah. There's a question from the team at JFF about the research and the target population. Could you talk a little bit more about the focus on soft skills given different target populations and any patterns you saw?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to reframe the question a bit. Okay, I'm reading. Okay, so... Oh, no, that's a different question. I'm sorry. So the research around target populations, I every program had kind of their own target population. I'm not sure I quite understand the question, so if you could give them
I think the question is around sort of the impact of soft skills at different target populations.
Ah, okay.
So for example, high school versus someone who's in college versus someone who's trying to get a job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That makes sense. So it varied by kind of developmental periods as well as general outcomes. So for example, we would see that if we looked at soft skills being taught to elementary school students, we would see a reduction in negative behaviors, absences, maybe fighting or things like that, compared to high school students where we would see kind of more improved grades or performances on different measures. But it ultimately came down to the specific program outcomes and what it was that they were looking to achieve in order to kind of best determine what impact soft skills had broadly on a particular population.
Yeah, Tim's asking a question about staffing, which I don't think you got into too much in terms of what staffing looked like. Do you want to respond to that?
Sure. Yes. So the gold standard organizations, yes, they almost always had a third party researcher or evaluation team that they were working with. They usually worked with a local or affiliated university. Handful of them had an internal member as well, but the internal member really helped kind of facilitate the collaboration between the two groups.
Yeah. I want to move towards, Tom asked a question about, and this will lead us into the next section around evaluation, if any of the program measured growth in success skills like agency and collaboration. Do you want to lead with that as part of the evaluation, or is there one in there that highlights that?
Sure, yeah. That is actually a great transition. So what we found ultimately when we looked at evaluation, there are a number of different approaches that you can take. There are a number of tools that you can use. There are many different data sources that you can pull from, including participants or parents or teachers or internship supervisors, as well as types of evaluation. So to kind of answer your question, at a high level, we shared kind of different approaches, a more youth participatory evaluation approach, some more hands-on exercise and role-playing evaluation approaches, some collaborative efforts that we saw one group doing in Chicago where they were kind of several agencies that came together to capacity build their own evaluation efforts, because as we know, it can be very time-consuming. But I think when it comes to success skills, I'm going to jump ahead to, I don't have my slide number. I think this is around 34. So for example, the University of Pennsylvania has an Authentic Happiness Center where they develop and store a number of questionnaires and assessments that measure a variety of areas that have to do with anything under the positive psychology umbrella. That could be happiness, that could be flourishing, that could be purpose and fulfillment. So when it comes to success skills, I think that we're going to have to get a bit more specific about exactly which skills, but I'm thinking they're a good repository or research to kind of look, because they have measures around grit or gratitude or collaboration and the way we work with others and things like that.
Could I remind folks to mute themselves if it's possible? We can hear you talking, and I'm not able to mute you. We'll also get into that a little bit, Elle, when you get to the taxonomies, I think. Joe asked a question about any indication that soft skills can be effectively paired with hard skill.
Yes. So we have a number of programs that we're teaching soft skills in collaboration with more STEM or technology-focused areas, and they were really intentional about measuring both how students are growing their kind of knowledge and learning, both in the hard skills space, as well as combining their methodologies to teach the soft skills along with that. So being intentional about giving collaboration opportunities on like a technology challenge or a case study challenge or something like that.
as well as giving opportunities within their learning model to enhance their public speaking skills or communication skills.
Great. Let's to that question too, two of our grantees, Europe and Generation, have focused on that combination in a way. They don't specifically just do soft skills, and we have a couple decks on some of their work. If anyone's interested in those, we could send those out as well. Let's move just to talk about the taxonomies a little bit. This was a little tricky. While I think we all would love to just have one taxonomy that we all worked off of, it was a little bit more complex. So, Elle, I'd love you to walk through sort of what you found and where the common areas are and what you think we should do with this sort of not having a perfect taxonomy.
Sure. So we went through kind of a process for selecting a taxonomy that could kind of befit it to this space. And there's a lot of value in that it could help us better understand where the gaps and the opportunities are, as well as the commonalities and differences. And so first thing we did was we conducted a literature review, and we just wanted to get a sense of the spread of various soft skills taxonomies. So this was really comprehensive. We conducted a review that included search terms like soft skills, non-technical skills, SEL, 21st century skills, work skills, life skills, interpersonal skills. We really wanted to capture kind of everything in the space and see what we were, what was available. And the research came from a number of stakeholders, not just academia, but employers and instructors and students. We wanted to be as inclusive as possible. And outside of that, they kind of came up with a number of skills and of various frameworks that was also kind of sourced from their own specific discipline, the literature, and government reports and standard frameworks. And so we looked at all that data and we kind of narrowed it down to just the smaller number of taxonomies to look at. And we gave preference to the ones that had the most kind of applicability to the space that we're working in that weren't just specific to maybe employability or something like that, as well as the ones that were the most concise, because we found that some of the frameworks had 12 or 15 or 16 clusters and not necessarily very usable or manageable. And then we also went for the frameworks that were the most generalizable across various disciplines, just to represent the frameworks that we were looking in the space. And there were three that kind of emerged as the most relevant. So this first one where we kind of look at soft skills as either cognitive or interpersonal, how we learn, how we manage ourselves, and how we manage our relationships with others. And it touches on things like critical thinking and leadership and integrity and adaptability. We had a second one that was made up of just four clusters of social, personal, self, and learning. So kind of similar to the first, how we engage with others, how we manage ourselves, how we learn, and then some. This one kind of parsed out the difference between kind of emotional management and kind of like self-management. So the difference between like empathy versus kind of forcing yourself to regulate and buckle down and get something done. And then this last one came out of Vivian Meng's research in the space and meta-learning. And this one categorized it as self-regulated learning versus creativity versus social skills. So how we learn, how we force ourselves to learn, how we engage with others, and then the cognitive skills that help us innovate. And we find that any three of these skill taxonomies make sense and kind of fit with the landscape and are inclusive enough and broad enough that they can be applied to the span of developmental periods that we're addressing when we look at the soft skills landscape. And then kind of as I touched on earlier, we have our programmatic outcomes landscape, which is a bit cleaner, and it just touches on those four areas of employment, civics, education, and well-being. And this is not all inclusive, but just an example of some of the types of programs that can fall under those categories.
Great. Thanks, Al. As is our tradition, I'd love in the last couple of minutes for folks to just reflect on any other clarifying questions about the taxonomies, or really would just love for you to put some reflections on questions this raised for you, or new insights that you gained, or things you wish we knew more about. So new insights for you, things you wish we knew more about, because that can help us think through what is the next level of inquiry or things that people are interested in, or ways in which you might apply this. Feel free to put that in the chat in the next couple of minutes, and then I will preview our next webinar. Just give you a couple minutes to do that. Elle, was there anything else you wanted to add?
There isn't. I think we had some really good questions that kind of gave a great high-level overview of questions that are kind of top of mind for program leaders in the space.
Yeah, great. Okay, while folks are doing that, let me just remind you, we'll probably have the next webinar sometime in April or late March, and we'll focus on our social capital analysis that Julia Freeland Fisher has been doing with us. She's just finished a book on the topic. And then following that, we will have a webinar. I think many of you know that Emily Lockwood has been leading some research and focus groups with young people. The first webinar we started on was really around social and cultural narratives around the future of work and how the media and young people view that. We've done some really big deep dives with young people and influential adults in their lives and want to report back sort of what we learned and how they're framing the challenges and opportunities in front of them. Thank you so much for putting reflections. I really appreciate it. It really does help us think about what's useful and what's not useful and where we should take the research next, and look forward to having you join us on the next webinar. Thank you very much.